This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is not the first time that we've heard complaints from NGOs like Médecins Sans Frontières. Now they're saying the situation in the Moria migrant camp on the Greek island of Lesbos is completely unsustainable.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also tomorrow, the country Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland, holds its first elections under its new name. Zimbabwe's politicians point fingers over the country's cholera outbreak. And in the Gambia, the government declares a national food crisis. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Uganda legislator Robert Chagulani, also known as Bobby Wine, has been greeted with tight security as he returned home from the U.S. Chagulani arrived at Entebbe this afternoon aboard a Kenya Airways plane. He was reportedly taken by authorities from the airport to a nearby police station and held for about 3 hours before being taken home. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Media reports say crowds chanting slogans gathered at the police station holding Chagulani. However, Uganda police spokesperson Emilian Kaima released a statement indicating Chagulani was safely home. Kaima said police had provided the legislator with transport, escort and a lead car to his home in Magere. Earlier, police and the army were heavily deployed along the road leading to Entebbe International Airport to prevent crowds from forming. A Ugandan government spokesperson told VOA that tight security was needed because Wine supporters are violent. A number of politicians and journalists were stopped at roadblocks mounted at Kajansi, about 15 kilometers away from the airport. Those who insisted were arrested and briefly put behind bars. Alex Sagala is a journalist with Uganda's Daily Monitor newspaper.
I got lucky that there was someone I knew who told me to go back peacefully. Otherwise, I think it would have been something more than that. Yeah, so I had to stop and wait for my friends to come and join me from here in Kajansi.
International and local media say members of his band and his manager were arrested before his arrival. Although police had issued guidelines allowing Bobby Wine's close family members at the airport, his elder brother was barred. Paul Sentamu is one of Chagulani's brothers.
I was going to welcome my brother, but I had other news that my big brother, Eddie Owe, has been arrested. So what should I expect if I go there? For now, I'm waiting for my brother here because I cannot go anywhere because they've deployed.
Medad Segona is a Ugandan legislator and Bobby Wine's lawyer. He expressed disappointment over what he called the militarization of Ugandan affairs.
We can resolve our political differences without involving the security forces. The more we involve security forces in the politics of our country, the more we risk the country, the more we risk our children. I am now angry that you can take my country to be a military barracks, simply because one member of parliament is coming back, you know, from a trip where you forced him to go for treatment, then the rest of us must be prisoners in our country. It's a shame.
Semakula Lutamaguzi is another Ugandan legislator. He said that heavy security deployment infringes on Ugandans' enjoyment of their constitutional rights.
Is it within the constitution that we shouldn't welcome our comrades wherever they come from? So I'm just wondering why the state is panicking. But as a country, I know we have freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and shouldn't limit our colleagues, especially citizens of this country, from expressing their wishes, especially when they are doing it in a democratic manner.
The popular singer has been in the United States for medical attention over what he says was torture he was subjected to while he was in custody. In public appearances in the U.S., he has appeared badly injured. He and 33 others, including four legislators, are facing treason charges for allegedly pelting President Yoweri Museveni's convoy during campaigning in Uganda's Arua district. He is out of prison on bail, but will return to court on 1st October. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Yesterday, Zimbabwe President Mnangagwa visited parts of Harare that are affected by cholera and wished patients a speedy recovery. The outbreak has claimed 35 lives and left thousands fighting to recover from the disease. The illness is not new to Zimbabwe, neither is the blame game among politicians. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinovashi has details.
Last week, the Minister of Health, Dr. Obed Dayamoyo, said the cholera outbreak in the capital was a clear case of negligence by the city council.
In this particular case, the city of Harare has had a big problem. This whole problem has arisen as a result of blocked sewers. And these were reported and were never repaired for at least two months. The work was not done. There was no repair. Right? And now we've ended up with the whole Glenview, Budiro area being affected. So as we speak, I'm told by the mayor that they are busy repairing the blocked sewers.
The minister said there has also been little, if any, refuse collection in residential areas and lack of decent water supply. In addition, Minister Moyo says some vendors have been selling raw meat in the area where the outbreak started off. This has resulted in the renewed running battles between the Harare City Council and vendors. Samuel Wadzai Mangoma is with the Vendors Initiative for Social and Economic Transformation. He does not welcome the return of the cat and mouse scenario between vendors and authorities who want to crack down on them.
We are opposed to the current evictions, in as much as we appreciate the fact that the government have got the responsibility to ensure that there is decongestion in the central business districts, to ensure that the public is not exposed to health hazards.
Mfundo Mlilo is the chief executive officer of Combined Harare Residents Association.
The vendors have never caused any outbreak. You can go back as far as 1992. There is no cholera typhoid outbreak in this city that has been caused by vendors. We agree there is a need to manage the informal sector in the city center. But saying that vendors are causing cholera is a failure to understand the situation.
Mlilo says the authorities have been doing well in managing the crisis, but fears it may get worse with the looming rains.
When the rain season comes, we will know it will explode. And remember, we always have typhoid and cholera during the rain season. It's unfortunate that this year it started early, but we know that when the rain season comes, it creates a fertile ground for spread of typhoid and cholera.
Mlilo says the ruling ZANU-PF always blames the opposition-run council for negligence, but both of the main political parties, including MDC, have roles to play. While the council, like the government, spends the bulk of its budget on wages, government has not been funding the cash-strapped council for years. As the disease rages on and claims more lives, a state of emergency has been declared and public gatherings have been banned. As a result, many shows scheduled for this month have been cancelled or postponed. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashi from Harare.
Tomorrow, Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland, holds its first elections under its new name, which was bestowed by the king earlier this year. But critics of Africa's last absolute monarchy say this poll is anything but a show of democracy. Like all issues in this country, the king has the final say. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Technically, this is Eswatini's first ever round of elections. In April is the tiny mountain kingdom, until then known as Swaziland, celebrated 50 years of independence from Britain, the king suddenly, unilaterally changed the country's name. Voters will on Friday choose 55 parliamentarians to fill the lower house of this nation of some 1.3 million people. King Mswati III, who has ruled since 1986 with unlimited constitutional powers, gets to choose another 10 legislators. Political activist Kenneth Kunene, the general secretary of the nation's Communist Party, says he is not sorry that he is missing this historic occasion. Political parties like his are banned from participating in elections. Since 2005, Kunene has lived in exile just outside the enclave nation, which is surrounded on all sides by South Africa and Mozambique. Rights groups have frequently criticized the government for curbing freedoms and rights, and Kunene says he agrees.
Is there any freedom of expression? People that want to express themselves, they are shorted, they are beaten, they are silenced, and others are forced to leave the country in whatever way. So are they, under such circumstances, can there be elections? We say no.
In recent days, however, Swazis have expressed themselves in large numbers, with hundreds of public sector workers taking to the streets of the nation's four largest towns to demand higher wages and government reforms. In the commercial hub of Manzini, they were met with police force, including stun grenades and beatings, which drew condemnation from rights groups. Chris Ngwenya, an organizer from the Ngwane National Liberatory Congress, says these protests are about far more than just wages and work conditions. They are, he says, political as well.
The workers are also, you know, demonstrating or venting out against the high levels of unemployment that are prevailing in the country amidst the current corruption that we see. Workers are also reflecting their frustration with the shortages of drugs or medication in hospitals. Workers are also, you know, showing, you know, their displeasure with the way the country is being governed.
Like Kunene, Ngwenya says he holds little hope of change with this poll. His party, the oldest in the country, says things can only change if power moves away from the throne.
Our view has been that the monarch must modernize. Our view has been that the king must relinquish, you know, certain political power. Our view has been that the powers of the monarch need to be curtailed so that the power to govern or the power to actually form a government can rest with the majority of the people.
VOA made multiple attempts to reach government officials, but calls and messages were not returned. The government's official website makes no pretense of Eswatini being an ordinary democracy, describing the king as being born to rule and the only absolute monarch in Africa who rules his country with a firm hand. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known by the acronym MSF, is calling for an emergency evacuation of vulnerable people, especially children, from the Moria refugee camp on Lesbos Island in Greece to other EU member states. MSF teams say they are witnessing unprecedented health and mental health crises in refugee children that include suicides, attempted suicides, and self-harming. Conditions in the camp and access to medical care are deteriorating on the island, which now holds more than 9,000 people, far more than its maximum capacity of 3,100. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the dire situation on Lesbos Island and the response of the Greek government.
This is not the first time that we've heard complaints from NGOs like Médecins Sans Frontières. Now they're saying the situation in the Moria migrant camp on the Greek island of Lesbos is completely unsustainable. This camp is built for 3,000 people and there are now 9,000 migrants and refugees in this camp. And there's a great deal of concern about the impact of this health and mental health emergency on the men, women, and especially the children living in this camp. And psychologists are saying they're seeing an increase in suicide attempts and self-harm, particularly among children, as well as cases of sexual attacks inside this camp.
Also, are the children, are they unaccompanied children?
There is a mix, I think, of the children who are housed inside this camp. We've seen new arrivals recently. Just a few hundred came in the last few days. They're continuing to come, even though the numbers, as we know, are lower this year than in other years. The regional governor, Christina Kalogoriou, said that she too was concerned about the situation and threatened to shut this camp down within 30 days unless the government stepped in.
And what has the government said it's going to do at this time?
Well, the Greek government, under pressure, has said that it will move 2,000 asylum seekers out of this overcrowded camp in the next couple of weeks. That's not going to be enough, I don't think, to relieve the pressure, but it's a start, it's a step in the right direction. They will be moved to the mainland and hopefully other parts of Europe. But as we know, many other European countries do not want to share the burden of these migrant arrivals. So countries like Greece, Italy and Spain have been on the front line of this migrant crisis.
Can you talk a little bit more just about really what is going on there at the camp?
Well, the camp itself is so overcrowded. There are reports that there's raw sewage running through the camp, which is incredibly inappropriate and unhealthy, of course, unsanitary. But the psychologists from Médecins Sans Frontières said they were particularly concerned about children aged between 6 and 18 years. The teams had observed nearly a quarter of these children, 18 out of 74, had shown indications of self-harm, attempted suicide, or thoughts of committing suicide. And many children suffer from panic attacks, anxiety, aggressive outbursts, and nightmares. Now, many of these children, as we know, have come from war-torn countries like Syria and Iraq, where they've already experienced extreme levels of violence and trauma. So being in these extreme conditions is really a concern, and experts say that they feel that the conditions are exacerbating their mental health, which is in a fragile state.
From MSF's standpoint, how long do they think that this can go on like this before they start seeing worse conditions?
Well, they feel that this is an extreme emergency. The situation is urgent. They want to see urgent action. We've seen an immediate response from the Greek government. Now they'll be looking to see that that is followed through. So there is concern, particularly because there are still new arrivals. 3,000 people were transferred from Moria to the mainland over the summer. Another 700 were moved last week, according to the Greek authorities. But we're still seeing new arrivals. So the pressure is not going to necessarily go away unless the Greek government takes more extreme action and moves even more people out of this camp. In terms of the overall arrivals, we've seen 80,000 migrants arrive in Europe so far this year. Only 22,000 of those have arrived in Greece, and half the arrivals have gone to Spain, with another 20,000 in Italy. Those numbers are down on previous years, but it's this overcrowding in the camps that is causing concern among NGOs such as Médecins Sans Frontières.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking with me from Rome. Well, Africa's health problems are nearly as vast as the continent, but scientists and doctors who gathered this week in Rwanda say genetic research is key to solving many of those issues. They hope to use cutting-edge technology to cure ancient diseases. Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali.
The Human Heredity and Health Africa Initiative, or H3 Africa, aims to create a network of laboratories and research centers across Africa. The goal? Study the environmental and genetic factors that link disease, vulnerability, and drug reactions for people on the continent. Mayowa Ojo Owalabi is the dean of the Department of Medicine at the University of Ibadan in Nigeria.
This consortium is about using the tools of genetics and genomics to unravel the causes of diseases such that we will discover new ways of mitigating the body of disease, both non-communicable diseases as well as infectious diseases. With the tool of genomics, we will be able to identify new molecular targets.
This week, H3 researchers from Africa, the United States, and Europe are gathered in Kigali. One of the issues medical practitioners and medical researchers confront in Africa is that governments on the continent and in donor nations often focus on only medical crises. Those gathered in Kigali say the focus needs to be on building a broader, deeper system, which looks at the common underpinnings to many of the problems in Africa. Dr. Paul Katongole from Makerere University in Uganda says the H3 network helps to do that.
There are so many different groups that are researching on different diseases, and so far this has led to capacity building and training of so many young researchers, infrastructure development, building of labs, putting up training institutions, and so many other things.
Aniefioku Udowakang, a doctoral candidate at Sheikh Anta Diop University in Dakar, says building capacity and infrastructure will help end the problem of African health experts moving to developed countries for better opportunities.
We have government officials, we have people with money, people with means who have to travel outside of the African soil to be able to get treatment for diseases. We have the capacity building and the training and the support that we need. African scientists will be retained on the African continent, and even those that are out, I believe, will come back to develop, because all of us are looking for how to develop the African continent.
H3 Africa was founded by the U.S. National Institutes for Health, and it works in cooperation with the Wellcome Trust in Britain, as well as universities across Africa and researchers in Europe. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
In the Gambia, the government has declared a national food crisis because of this year's poor rains. The government says over 1.7 million Gambians are at risk of hunger, as crops are not promising. Pandarium Bai reports.
Gambia's National Food Security Council says major crops such as rice, groundnut, maize, and early millet will be cut by the low rains. Livestock production also is down. Mamadou Sabali was budget director at the finance ministry during the government of former ruler Yahya Jammeh, who was forced out in 2016.
Very unfortunate situation, but I'm not surprised because the rain pattern has been pretty irregular this year. I think it's good that the government has acknowledged that this is a problem, because the people who would be worst hit would be the rural dwellers. And these people, their situation is actually bad enough even when the rains come normal. So if there is a problem with rainfall, the situation is going to be terribly worse.
The Food and Agriculture Organization's 2018 report on global food security says climate variability are a key driver behind a rise in global hunger. It also says hunger is significantly worse in countries with agricultural systems that are highly sensitive to rainfall, temperature, and drought. For the Gambia, Mamadou Sabali says deforestation adds to the problem by altering rainfall patterns, changing river flows, and causing water runoff.
We definitely are not handling our environment properly, and it's just not in the Gambia, because you know we are part of a sub-region. So what happens in surrounding countries like Senegal, Guinea, would definitely affect us. And we know, for instance, that there has been a lot of damage done to the forest cover, even in our backyard here in the southern region of Senegal called the Casamance.
Environment Minister Lamine Diba recently said the government is changing its tactics in fighting deforestation.
In the Gambia, we have seen that state-controlled forest management approach has not paid dividend to both the state and the communities, and the communities agitated for who claim their rights to have stake in the forest. We have changed the approach to community forest management approach.
The government has appealed for international aid for the 1.7 million Gambians it says could face hunger. Gambian government hopes to collaborate with donor partners to provide more than 200,000 metric tons of rice and 99,000 tons of coarse grains to ease food insecurity. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shaogun Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.